TNT Sport Pods.
Leicester Tigers. Just let that name sit for a moment. Yeah, when most people think of the English Premiership, they're the first club that come to mind. They've more Premiership titles than any other team and 21 major trophies. But it was their success at the turn of the millennium which truly established Leicester as a heavyweight of European rugby, with four back-to-back league titles and two consecutive Heineken Cups. This is Rugby Stories. Over the next 13 weeks, we'll look back across some of the game's most iconic tales with some of the game's most iconic players. In this first episode, we take a journey back to the 2000-2001 season, when the Tigers wrote themselves into the history books as the first British club to do the elusive league and European double.
Leicester Rugby was just about winning, and winning at all costs.
People actually said, "You actually fight at training."
Not once, but twice, those punches right in front of the referee.
This wasn't about gaining friends, it was about gaining titles and trophies.
We will front up, we will earn the right to win the match by physically squeezing the life out of the opposition.
Can Leicester do something special out here?
That could be the moment.
In my head, I'm sort of thinking, what's he done that for?
Jono and all those guys are there with their fingers crossed.
All we need to do is just keep them out, keep them out, keep them out.
Off he goes. What a magnificent effort.
You'd hit him in the face with a crowbar and they'd keep coming.
And I remember just thinking, this is living. This is living.
In Rugby Stories, you get the full, extended, uncut anecdotes from the players, coaches and key figures. Some never told before. There is one name that really encapsulates what the Tigers are all about in that period. Confident, full of talent, noisy and annoying to play against. I'm talking about Austin Healey. What a career. 51 England caps, 2 Lions tours and 237 games for Leicester. He is one of the most recognisable names and voices of the Tigers' glory years. The scrum half, although he'll tell you he could play any position in the back line, arrived in 1996 from Wigan side Oral. Healy's attitude was perfect for a side who were building a win-at-all-cost mentality. But if he thought he'd get a warm welcome, he was mistaken.
I didn't really know what rugby meant to Leicester, indeed to many clubs, until I joined. And I came as this sort of maverick-style player in 96. And in my very first training session, Richard Cockerell, in a game of touch, punched me in the face. We had a bit of a scuffle and I sort of asked him, what was that for? And he said, you're not welcome here. You're an outsider. I pointed out that he also wasn't from Leicester. He was from rugby. But it sort of, I think it set the tone, and that's what they were about. They were all about setting the tone for new people, buying into who the club were, who the players needed to be. And basically, Leicester rugby was just about winning, and winning at all costs. They didn't care who they upset. They didn't care who hated them. In fact, in a lot of ways, they wanted more people to dislike them. This wasn't about gaining friends. It was about gaining titles and trophies. And I realised that really quickly when I joined.
Austin Healey, very, very talented. He thought he could play in any position, and he did. No, I'd known him a long time. We'd grown up playing schoolboy rugby together. He's a Marmite character. You know, he plays up to the camera as being a bit of an idiot, but actually he's a great bloke. And he's actually, which is annoying, if you needed somebody at 4 a.m. to come and get you out or pick your kids up, he'd go. So don't listen to all the blah that gives you on telly. He's actually a great bloke that earned the right to be the maverick and kept the respect to the forwards. I mean, yes, I've punched him in the face. Who hasn't? You know, I'm sure there's a queue of people to bring him back into line when he goes too far. But he comes back into line. You know, he says sorry and he then delivers on the field.
That was Tim Stimpson. He signed for Leicester in 1998 after a difficult season with Premiership champions Newcastle Falcons. The fullback would find his place with the Tigers, becoming one of the league's top point scorers. But just like Austin Healey, Stimpson also received the Richard Cockerell treatment when he arrived at the club.
It was a dream, really. I think as a kid being brought up in Yorkshire, my dad had taken me down to watch the Bar Bars game, and it had always been, you know, the big club. So when I got away from Newcastle, I'd say that, I turned up at my first training session, you know, a bit scared, a bit in awe. I didn't expect Richard Cockerell just to punch me in the face. But he did. And I was so shocked, I hit him back. And then I got a rollicking from Dean Richards in a porter cabin for bringing trouble into the club. But then looking back, I think it was all a stitch-up. I'm pretty sure that was Dino just testing out this young kid coming down from Newcastle. Is he one of us? It was a tough school. It's not what I wanted on my first day, but it sort of set the tone that to play for Leicester, you've got to earn that shirt. And it's not an exaggeration, but you earn it with blood. Privileged to be part of that family. I miss it now. I miss being part of a group of 30 or 40 blokes that every single day turn up and graft, and you can rely on them. You know, what are our ambitions? And it was to win the Premiership and then to win the European Cup and then to keep winning it. And that was the only way we could see ourselves being compared against, you know, the Ajaxes or Man Uniteds or 49ers. And we tried to look outside of rugby to try and set our stall to be the best club rugby team there was. And that's what gave room to, you know, people like Austin Healey, who had that inability to listen, inability to be a real true team player. You know, he wanted to be the star, but in a Leicester culture, you needed that. And the likes of Steve Booth out on the wing, or individual mavericks who had almost, you know, let's say that the forwards is the meal and the backs are the drinks. And Austin might have been the cocktail to go with that. If Austin was picked, I'd have to find out whether Clive Woodward was watching, because Austin would tap and go instead of kicking the ball to the corner, which was almost a guaranteed 5 points for Backy. So as I ran forward to take the kick, I'd be running forward to clear him out the first ruck. But we needed that. Otherwise, it would have been too forward dominated.
And speaking of dominant forwards, Ben Kay came into the Leicester side the year after they'd become champions in 1999, the first of their four in a row. The second row would quickly rise to become one of his country's most celebrated forwards, winning 62 England caps and, of course, the 2003 Rugby World Cup. Although, he doesn't like to talk about it. Kay remembers from the moment he arrived at Welford Road, only the biggest trophies were due for Leicester, and one in particular had eluded them.
When I first joined Leicester, I don't think sort of winning the Heineken Cup was necessarily talked about, but definitely having won a league title the year before I joined, the expectation was that you would go on and win another league title. In my first season, 99-2000, we did that. We didn't perform particularly well in the Heineken Cup. There were a few people that had been brought in during the World Cup period, and you know, I can remember losing a game at Donnybrook away at Leinster. We didn't manage to progress in that tournament. So having won the second league title in my first season, 99-2000, I think there was almost an expectation that that's the base of what we should be achieving. And there was a few players that were getting sort of towards the end of their career, and there was just this sort of developing feeling that they needed to achieve that. And us youngsters were sort of brought along in that tidal wave. Nothing was ever explicitly said, but you got the feeling that that was the next step. We'd won two league titles, we expected to win the third, but we weren't really going to be a great team unless we won the Heineken Cup. And there was also a bit of a hangover around what had happened in 1997.
Leicester had so nearly won the Heineken Cup at their first attempt, but they were humbled in the final by the French side, Brive.
Before I got there, Leicester had lost to Brive in a European final. So there was this unfinished business. There was a question overhanging all the likes of Jono and Dorian, Daz and all those lads, Nobby, Graham Rowntree. They'd been there and they'd been humbled in the European Cup, and they wanted to put the record straight.
Brive have just been magnificent, as impressive a club performance as you'll ever see.
Well, the 97 final, I think things went wrong probably the night before. We were doing TV shows and there was probably a little bit too much confidence. We'd hammered Toulouse in the semi-final, who were seen as the best side in Europe by a mile with many stars in their team. And then we were playing Brive, who'd played pretty well, had some good players, but on paper we should have slaughtered them. And I think that there was a bit of complacency there for the first time ever. I don't blame myself completely, mainly the forwards. I think it was their fault. I missed one tackle in the game.
If there was anyone out there who could inspire Leicester to the holy grail of European success, it was Dean Richards. Richards spent his 15-year playing career at Leicester and was in that 1997 side who had lost out in the final. He took over from Australian Bob Dwyer in 1998. His first two seasons as director of rugby had brought consecutive premiership titles, but now he wanted Ben Kay and his teammates to focus on Europe.
Dean Richards was probably my rugby hero growing up. To join his team was a bit of a dream come true. He was very simple in his philosophy. You outwork teams, you're tougher than teams, and you never die. And those first few training sessions were a bit of an eye-opener. He never actually came out onto the field to do any coaching unless there was a maul session in which he'd put his boots on, come out, throw a few haymakers and join in. He would pick the team. He would take all the team meetings. When things weren't going well in the first half, it'd be him that delivered the hairdryer at halftime.
I think it's really important that you know where the buck stops. And with Dino, you did. It was his team. He didn't do a lot of hands-on coaching. He'd probably watch out of his port cabin. And the first time you'd see him in the week properly was when he was reading out the team on a Wednesday morning. But he'd been doing his work behind the scenes. You know, a massive lieutenant in John Wells. Two peas in a pod, really, when it comes to grit. Always reading people. Always knowing how to, you know, get the most out of you. And that was his skill. Man management of big egos, keeping them all hungry. He did that by making us all fight. Tuesdays and Wednesday, there'd be a bloodbath in the back row. You got great players like Paul Gustard and Peter Short not getting regular starts. Anywhere else they'd be playing. But he kept them hungry and kept them ready. So when they came on, they were star players.
Went into the 2000 and 2001 season, I'd say pretty confident with the goal. We used to sit in the old team room at the training ground just before the start of the season, 3 or 4 weeks before the start, halfway through pre-season training. And Dino would get up and say, right, it's over to you guys to set the teamship rules and also the aspirations for the year. If anybody at any point said, we're not going to win anything, or we're not going to win something or everything, they'd get battered. The mindset was, we're going to win everything this season. You remember senior players standing up and saying things like, I can't see another side out there that's better than us in Europe, so why can't we win it?
No doubt about it, Leicester had an imposing first 15, but it was the depth of the squad that many felt made them the best team in the country. As the 2000-2001 season began, Austin Healey remembers a familiar, ominous start in the Premiership.
Welford Road was a given. If you turned up at Welford Road, we would beat you. And we would beat you whether Jono was playing, whether I were playing, it didn't matter. We would beat you. And other teams knew that. They'd come, they'd get on the bus, and sometimes they'd send a weakened side because they knew they were going to get hammered anyway. There's always been an energy at Welford Road in the first 5-10 minutes where you show the opposition what they're about to face. And it's overwhelming.
No one ever, when you started the season, no one said, right, we're going to be European champions this year. It was about what we were going to do in the first weekend. And it sounds an old cliche. Huge record of not being beaten at Welford Road. Made it a complete fortress. So it felt like at times teams were turning up already beaten.
Although they are unbeaten at home in the league, Leicester had failed to win in 3 of their first 5 away games by the end of September. And it wasn't going to get any easier when the Heineken Cup got underway and they set off on their European odyssey. Leicester were in Pool 6 with Glasgow Caledonians, Welsh powerhouses Pontypridd and Pau of France.
Heineken Cup at the beginning of the 2000-2001 season had started pretty well for us. We'd had Pau at home, always nice to start with a home game, particularly against the French who at that time were renowned for not travelling particularly well. We backed that up with a win away against Glasgow. Freezing cold day, but had come out with the points. We had that confidence and we were on a roll. And then we had a really tough trip to go down to Pontypridd. Very welcoming crowd, shall we say. And I can remember the atmosphere was absolutely bouncing, you know, from the trip along the narrow streets into the stadium and being waved at, not necessarily with all their fingers showing. We were fully aware of the atmosphere we were going into, and it didn't disappoint.
And here come Leicester Tigers, led out by Martin Johnson, the most consistent side in England for, what, the past 3 or 4 years now. Certainly the most powerful forward pack. Everyone here in Pontypridd understands the nature of the challenge tonight.
I think it's one of those pictures. It was a wet, wet night. They were just in charge. They put the ball back in the pocket, slot 3. Another penalty, slot 3. We had that sense of self-belief usually where eventually somebody somewhere would make a break, and but it never happened.
Sweetly struck by Jarvis. What a kick for Pontypridd.
It seemed to be looking from behind the posts as 3 more sails over.
Well, that is excellent from Pontypridd, forcing Leicester to play the ball, and they've played themselves into trouble.
Yeah, so we sort of came away from a wet Wales, outplayed, outgunned. And yeah, I think people were talking about, you know, Fortress Welford Road, but are these actually guys actually good enough to go away and win this?
The final whistle blown at Sardis Road, Pontypridd and their supporters celebrating a famous victory.
The debrief was a really good opportunity for Dean Richards to hammer home the fact that perhaps we weren't quite as good as we thought we were, and we never wanted to be in that position again.
Although they won their fixture against Pontypridd a week later, Leicester's margin for error in Europe was now very, very slim. There could be no slip-ups in the final two pool matches, but they'd have to win without their inspirational leader, Martin Johnson, banned for 35 days and missing until February. It was time for the squad players to step up.
We'd lost Martin Johnson through suspension in the quarter-final of the Tetley Bitter Cup. He'd knee-dropped Duncan McRae for Saracens.
Oh, you can see it is the right knee that makes contact with McRae.
Well, yeah, Jono had a habit, didn't he, of being the enforcer and sometimes getting caught. So, yeah, we did it without Jono, but it is a squad, and that was what the whole thing around John Wells and Dino was, that we're not picking 15 blokes here, we're picking from 40. It was very difficult because there's another 10 blokes that may be international players that would have walked into any other Premiership team at that time, but they were part of our club. And it was really important that we had guys that could step up and were already international standard. They were already true Tigers. They'd already maybe played 50, 60, 70 games for Leicester. Or there were the young guns coming through that, you know, would then go on to be the Harry Ellises or the Andy Goods and play hundreds of games for England and Lions and stuff.
Tim Stimpson and Leicester would travel to France to face a must-win penultimate match with Pau. For any props out there, that means second last. There was bad blood between the sides, and Austin Healey knew Pau would like nothing better than to end Leicester's Heineken Cup season in the Pyrenees.
Well, we played in Pau in 1996 and won there before. Leon Lloyd's first touch, first try, miracle try. Obviously, Jono wasn't playing. We knew how physical they were. In the 96 game, about four players got gouged. A few got headbutted. Dean Richard came out and was throwing beer into the stand. And we did a victory lap in 96. So we sort of went there and they hated us. And we knew it was going to be really, really physical. So losing Jono was difficult.
Really, really tough challenge. The French are so difficult to play against away from home. It means everything to them not to lose on their home patch.
And there wasn't many cameras in stadiums then, and if they were, I don't think many of the French directors will have found the misdemeanours by the French players. They may have found them by the English players, but yeah, it was a physical, horrible game. I think Garforth was at his absolute best in this game, and Rowntree just running round, smashing people, never taking a backward step. You could hit him in the face with a crowbar and they'd keep coming.
I remember that game, it was a cracker, when Andy Goode was the star. I think he, if I remember rightly, he dropped a couple of goals.
Andy Goode, from some distance, it makes no difference.
Playing in France was always great fun, you know. Hostile atmosphere, firecrackers, noise, people booing you, you know, throwing stuff on the pitch, playing behind chicken wire. Brilliant, bring it on. And Andy Goode just sat in the pocket a couple of times and just put the knife in, really.
Snapped back to Goode, and he's got another one. And Leicester stretch further ahead.
We just basically choked them to death and came off with a win.
I think the Pau game was where we started to really show why we were going to be European champions that year. Played some really good rugby. I remember there was a tackle by a very talented Scouser in one of the last seconds of the game over the try line that prevented them scoring. He doesn't like to talk about it much, but if you get a chance to have a look at it on video anywhere, it's amazing.
Our ability to win away from home in those tough environments and Pontypridd had sort of added to that. But this was a real marker to go down to Pau, beat them on their own patch and beat them so convincingly. We felt, yeah, we could definitely do this.
Leicester beat Glasgow 41-26 at Welford Road in the final pool match to secure a home quarter-final. But with a number of first-teamers called up to the Six Nations squads, Healy and the team's stars had to lean on the squad players to guide Leicester into the semis.
Trying to remember how many players will have been in that England squad in 2001. But we sort of had like 7, 8, 9 players in the England squad and maybe a couple elsewhere. The club effectively stops playing and the young guys, the energy, they get their chance and they really keep the side driving forward. And then when you come back, you don't really get long to mould yourselves back into Leicester again. so the quarterfinals are often difficult games.
So a big feeling when the international contingent went away. We had to stay in a position where we were certainly no worse off than when they disappeared, and make sure that when they came back, we could slip straight back into gear and carry on pushing on. You know, you just got into the habit of being able to dig down into a dark place and find something. And if you look at some of the results that were going against us, our ability to come back at teams right at the end of games. Martin Johnson always used to say, if things weren't going well in a game, at some point this team's legs are going to go before ours, and then we'll come through and take them. And it's a really strong belief. Even if you're not that much fitter than the opposition, if you believe you are, you're never out of a game.
The great strength of Leicester in that era was not their senior players and not their stars. It was the guys that were just slightly below. If you were away at internationals, they would start.
And it was one future international who would star in the quarterfinal at home to Swansea. 22-year-old Jordan Murphy was switched from his usual right wing to the number 11 role to cover for the international absences. And my word, he made his mark.
Jordan Murphy, you know, the George Best of... I mean, some people might say, you know, me and Jordan were both vying to be the fullback, both vying to play for our countries and play for the Lions. But me and Jordy are mates first, and we played for each other rather than against each other. There's never been a moment of, oh, he's been picked, or he's got my shirt. There's never any of that, which is not the same as normal life, is it? It's in a Leicester team, we all were just focused on the prize of winning the next game, you know, sort of focusing on the next 5 minutes, and then eventually you'll earn the right to go for those finals and pick up the trophies we got. And if we'd been selfish, if we had really been prima donnas, we'd never have got there. We're delighted to be in the quarterfinals. We'd struggled to come out of the group embarrassingly before. It was Swansea, it was a step up. They were, you know, talented Welsh internationals, could really move the ball. But I think we just started really hot and didn't stop.
Fortunately for us, it wasn't that difficult. We seemed to gel straight away and put in a great performance. I think I scored. I think maybe Leon scored, Jordy.
Goes the other way. Easy rugby genius.
It was one of those days when we turned up. But Jordy, when he turns up, we just got to clap and applaud him. I think we even had a sort of a little crazy kick it over your head tap penalty move.
Murphy was putting on a show. They called him the George Best of rugby. He scored two tries and even tried an audacious overhead kick that nearly created another one for Leon Lloyd.
It didn't really come off. I didn't think we scored, but I think he scored a couple of tries. And it was just that sort of showtime mentality.
The funny thing is, when you speak to all the Leicester forwards, they all say it was the Leicester pack in those days that everyone was scared of. I sort of disagree with that a little bit. I disagree with it a lot, actually, because it's completely wrong. Yes, they may have been scared of the Leicester pack, but it was that Leicester back line that used to destroy teams.
Healy is very quick, and that's very special.
We had real talent in that back line that could tear sides apart. When we get back together with the forwards, we've watched a video looking back at old games, and it's really evident that the backs were better than the forwards. And now it's time for them to admit that.
It was the first time Leicester really stepped up as a potential winner, I think. It was the time when we played 15 or 22-man rugby, blew the opposition away, and there was nothing they could do about it. That's when I think we all looked at each other and thought, right, you know, we are a decent team. When we get it right, we're not just a forward pack that kicks its goals. We can actually play any type of rugby.
It was probably one of our most complete performances of the season. Again, that Welford Road roar. Those were the sort of games that you look back on and you think that was what it was all about. Playing for Leicester Tigers, playing rugby at that level was for moments like that.
41-10, Leicester into the semi-final. That game would be a few months down the line in April. And so the Premiership came back into focus. Although there was an end of season playoff competition in 2001, it wasn't until 2002-03 when it would decide the league winners. And so, before that crucial semi-final, Leicester had one goal to seal the Premiership title.
In that season, we were winning well in the league, and we wanted to win the league really quickly because it wasn't our main focus. Our main focus was definitely Europe. So I probably played at 80, 90% in those 3 weeks leading up to it, and the team did as well. So to win the league as early as we did and give us a little bit of a rest, and actually those young lads the chance to play a little bit more, was really good when we got to the latter stages.
If you're winning easy, and you're not really in reinventing and growing, when you come up against a side that is able to stop that route one, that plan A, have you rehearsed plan B and plan C enough? Sometimes it's a blessing to have all that momentum. It means you can relax. But if you get too relaxed or complacent, then that's when you start losing.
The third consecutive league title wrapped up early with the 51-7 thrashing of Newcastle on the 17th of March. Happy St. Patrick's Day. So now it's time to prepare for Europe. But there will be a familiar foe in wait. Gloucester in the semi-final on neutral ground at Vicarage Road. And it's fair to say that the complacency Stimpson had feared would affect the Tigers.
The semi-final, a neutral venue, Vicarage Road, against Gloucester. Gloucester finished the season in seventh in the table. The expectation was that we'd go down there and get the job done.
When we got Gloucester, I just thought, oh, well, we're through to the final then.
The first ever Heineken Cup European semi-final to be contested by two English teams.
We sort of cancelled each other out. What I remember, it was like a, instead of where, you know, the quarterfinal had been free-flowing, Jordan Murphy scoring from all over the place, that game was horrible. It was really tense.
We did our best to help Gloucester. We didn't play well at all. Gloucester raised their game, probably all they had to fight for the season.
It was one of our worst performances. Fair play to Gloucester, they stifled us a bit. But mistake after mistake, pressure after pressure from Gloucester, we thought we'd thrown it away.
Gloucester were out of the traps and well into the match. 6-6 after the first quarter of an hour. Austin Healy and his teammates had to take stock.
Come on, you've got to sort this out because this is getting away from us. And in those days, usually how you sorted it out, if you were under the cosh and you were 30 minutes in, you'd have a massive fight and somebody would be designated to start it. And that person would normally be Darren Garforth or Graham Rowntree as designated starter, but it would normally end up being Jono. You'd all pile in and then the game would sort of, it would seesaw in its energy a little bit and you'd come out on top.
For me, it only came down to a couple of big games, let's say quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, when I felt that our forwards weren't winning. You know, we weren't going to be able to bully Stade Francais or Gloucester people. And that's when, as a back three or someone, I would think, oh, great, it's now my job. It's now my job to step up and win the match and to try things a bit different.
Tim Stimpson would get his chance. Andy Gummisall's kick failed to find touch. Stimpson gathered it about 6 metres into his own half and just started running.
I spotted a little hole, ran around the short side. I'd run about 30, 40 metres and thought, what do I do now? So I started going across the pitch, still thinking, where is everybody?
Oh, what a run!
And thankfully, I heard this great, Stimbo, and it's Leon. Leon's rapid, and he's just Thierry Henry'd it right down the middle of the field. And I gave him, I was thinking about dummying the pop, and I thought, nah, it's too risky. So I just gave him the ball, thinking at least he's going forwards. Leon again, you know, so quick, read the game, got the ball, used his physicality and scored the try.
And that is some try.
Sigh of relief in at the final whistle.
And Leicester have won. Gloucester couldn't break that strong, strong Tigers defence in the end.
And that Gloucester game was not our best. I think we felt we'd got out of jail and we managed to get through to this final and we nearly slipped up. No disrespect to Gloucester, but I don't think it was the best semi-final. So I think it was pretty muted that night. I think we could have had a quiet beer. We always win or lose together. But I think it was a question of, hang on, we've escaped. Let's get back down to earth and let's realise that if we're going to win a final, which is a chance of a lifetime, we're going to have to get, 50% better.
A narrow escape and a 19-15 win. So, to the match that Leicester had been waiting for since 1997 and that brutal defeat to Brive. The final would be played in Paris and it would be Parisian opponents, the glamour side of French rugby, Stade Francais. Ben Kay was feeling the pressure.
The lead up to the final in Paris was just massive. Dean Richards made the decision for us to go out early. The Palace of Versailles Hotel, the day we arrived actually, my football team, Liverpool, won the European UEFA Cup, so a bit of an omen there for us. Just the build-up, the pressure started to mount. The nerves were absolutely huge.
Going to Paris to play against a team based in Paris didn't feel very neutral, but it added to the spectacle. You were used to staying in basic squaddy accommodation with Dino. And it's a real luxury for getting Hilton. But we were in this amazing hotel. We had this amazing team building. I think one of the things that Leicester were so good at was the night before, we'd always play corridor cricket. I remember that we had a tennis court. So it was a really elaborate game of corridor cricket. We had everybody taking part where you've got the bag man, Cliff, you know, bowling, getting Austin out, which brings everybody up in elated. Forwards and backs just playing the name game and all these sort of old-fashioned things where you're basically just spending time together, chilling out, knowing that the big pressure's coming tomorrow.
People walking around sort of blowing out their cheeks all the time. You know, it was that sort of constant sort of heart rate elevated walking around. And I think the night before the final, we put on Gladiator. Probably didn't help the mood to keep us calm, but just an overriding feeling of how big a game this was for the club, but equally for the likes of Darren Garforth, who, you know, the older members of the squad, that potentially this was going to be their last shot. And that sort of weighed quite heavily on me. And I remember going into the game being so nervous for them, really, but my part in what would be their rugby legacy. You know, I can remember thinking, I will never be as nervous for a game as this one. And absolutely I wasn't. You know, even World Cup finals, I've never been as nervous going into a game as I was at the Parc des Princes.
A side so used to winning were for once in unfamiliar territory. There were plenty of nerves and a few superstitions around Austin Healey's popcorn.
In 97, there was a lot of smiling and joking and laughing. And in 2001, the hotel the night before, it was like you were at a funeral. There was not a lot of talking. People looking at each other and snarling. Most people probably went to bed early. I went out and got my popcorn and then came back. It was a 40-minute taxi ride to get my popcorn. Came back and started eating it. And I had this other superstition as part. It was a sub-superstition that no one was allowed to eat my popcorn until I'd finished with it. And Will Johnson walked past me as I was on the physio table eating my popcorn, having a massage. And he put his hand in and took a mouthful. So I threw the popcorn over him, pushed him, and went back to reception, ordered another cab, went back out to the cinema, bought another popcorn, came back. This time nobody touched it. The only person that had ever eaten it before was Leon Lloyd. He just leant over with his mouth and ate it. And he got knocked out the following day in the game, stretchered off against Cardiff. In the subsequent game in 2001, Will Johnson broke his wrist, that right hand. So I told him, this, it was your own fault. You mess with the popcorn, and karma messes with you.
Match day in Paris. For Tim Stimpson, there were stars on and off the pitch, wherever he looked.
Arriving at the stadium, it was just boiling hot. You could feel the pressure, sort of no wind. Playing on a football pitch again, it felt like a very nice carpet. I mean, all the kickers these days have it really easy. But back at Welford Road was like a farmer's field. But it's very level, perfect conditions, and you're in their backyard. A bit of backyard of superstars. So I remember sort of every time the film camera would cut to the crowd, it was like supermodels. And Max was this well-known guy that had all sorts of restaurants and nightclubs on the Champs-Élysées. So it was like the Uggs from Middle England, from Leicester, turning up in Paris to play against the superstars.
We had a lovely kit man called Cliff Shepherd, unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but he was such a worrier about things and quite old, had played on the wing for the Tigers. And he said, oh, I've got this special treat for you lads, special treat. We'd got new tracksuits for the final. And he said, oh, on the morning of the game, come down and get your tracksuits. And they literally were the worst tracksuits you could imagine. He thought they were brilliant. They were bright green. I think we decided we either looked like bin men or paramedics. I think most of the lads threw them into the crowd afterwards.
After the fashion statement, Austin Healey and Leicester's leaders would gather the team. It was time for some last words before kickoff.
In the changing room, there'd be certain players that you'd know would have an outburst at some point, whether it was punching a wall or whatever it was. There'd be something that went on, but you sort of knew and expected it from him. And the changing room this time was a bit different. I remember it being incredibly hot, like unbelievably hot in there. They'd obviously turned the aircon off for us, which was very kind of them. Players were just sat there not really saying anything, not following their normal rituals. I spoke about that single-mindedness. There was a staring room. Everyone was staring at something, concentrating. And most good players can turn the concentration on 30 seconds before they run out. Some can joke all the way up to it. Me and Leon used to sit next to each other in the change room. We'd make up songs. Maybe that was a distraction. Maybe it was just because we were both nuts. But this change room was different. It was hot. It was a little bit dark, a little bit misty. You could feel the weight of the game on you. You could feel the anticipation from your teammates. It was memorable, yeah. I remember the change room more than I remember the game. We've done the team warm-up. We've come back in. I'm having a final painkiller. you get in the huddle and that's when you expect the either strategic stuff or some kind of inspiration. If you want Churchillian speeches, Jono gave probably the best speech I've ever heard him give because he didn't actually say anything. Jono got everyone in a huddle and we're all waiting for him to speak and he didn't say a word. He just looked at everyone for what felt like 20 minutes, like not a single word said. Guys were squeezing and squeezing and squeezing. They were getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And I think he just sensed that he knew everybody was right on the edge. Everybody was completely ready for the game. I tell people that he was actually trying to stare into your soul and ask you a question of, are you ready? But he already knew. He already knew that there was nobody in that starting 15 or indeed the 22 that wasn't ready to do whatever they needed to do.
The Parc de Princes has like the tunnel where you run out from. It's like a big holding room. So you come out of the changing room on either side. I can remember looking out onto the field before we run out. And because of the heat, there was almost like you're looking through a haze and you just had this blur of red, green and white on one side and red, white and blue on the other side. They thought we'll do the old thing of keeping a team waiting. I think we were meant to run out together. They thought we'll keep them waiting, soaking up the atmosphere, getting upset.
Everyone's sweating on edge, people on the verge of losing it completely. It was probably only 30 seconds. It might have been a minute. And Jono was saying to the ref, where are they? And he said, I've called them, they're coming. He went, forget that, and walked out.
So he ran out onto the field and the referee was probably a little bit slow to react and didn't really realise. But when they came out, led by Darren Garforth, we were all waiting on the halfway line and we were literally nose to nose as the referee came out and it was about to kick off. It was probably about to go. It wasn't messing around. It wasn't show for the cameras. This was as big as it got. The referee came out and struggled to find his whistle, blew it, separated us.
Instead of the normal lineup that you see with two sides either side of the referee, you had two sides face to face where the referee stood in the middle. It was like a Conor McGregor standoff before his bouts. And I was convinced it was going to go off at that stage and people would have been sent off before the game. Because like I said, they were on proper edge.
Yeah, Martin Johnson was a Leicester guy. His dad was a huge Leicester fan, used to travel. Jono obviously offered to look after him and fly him out to stuff. But wherever we went abroad in Europe, his dad would get on the supporters bus, 24-hour trip with a few cans of beer. The realisation of what it meant to all those Leicester people that had travelled to France for the weekend, we were not outmatched in Paris by their fans at all. The atmosphere running out for that game is something I'll never forget. It was, without doubt, the biggest atmosphere I'd run out to at that time, quite young into my career. And I remember just thinking, this is living. This is living.
Stade made the better start, and the adrenaline of the occasion was causing even some of Leicester's most experienced heads to make mistakes.
The forwards were getting hammered in the scrum. We couldn't get a base to attack. When we did attack, I made a break after about 20 minutes, and I made a ridiculous error.
Healy has a look. He has some space. Healy has some space. Really clever kick. Dominici, oh, he did really well. Sweeping up, clearing the danger.
Players were making mistakes. Everything was frantic. It was the craziest start to a game. The first 5-10 minutes was utter madness.
Stimson's kick, and it goes out on the full. And listen to the roars of Parisian derision.
One of the big dangers they had was Diego Dominguez, who was one of the best kicking 10s in world rugby, if not the best kicking 10 in world rugby. Not only from the floor with penalties, if we gave away penalties, but also very good at the drop goal.
Yeah, we were getting hammered. we were getting beaten up front. We were on the back foot. Diego Dominguez was kicking everything. So it's one of those games when from fullback, how can I influence the game? How can we change things?
Yeah, it's the first time probably I'd played in that volume of noise, and there I am trying to call the lineouts, and Dorian West can't hear them. Yeah, it was fairly brutal. There was some big shots going in, bit of animosity between the two teams. A lot of guys have played against each other before for club. A lot of guys have played each other internationally. There you are in this very public environment, digging your fingernails in and trying to hold on and be a part of this and influence it how you can.
So we sort of wanted to try and push them back a bit, which wasn't working.
Dominguez with the kick, and he has done it. Listen to the crowd, and no wonder. What an astonishing goal. One of the great goal kicks.
You give away a penalty, and you think, oh, that's 3 points.
Surely he can't do it again. Certainly long enough. That is absolutely miracle goal kicking. 15 points to 9. Start ahead.
The French side were leading at half time. In the Leicester dressing room, it was time for a change of game plan.
Sometimes if it's not working, you've just got to say to them, guys, it's not working. You know, you've got to eat a little bit of humble pie here. We didn't actually say that in the change room because it would have ended in death for me and a number of other of the backs. But we just said, we've scored 70 tries this season. In this game, we haven't looked like scoring a try. So why don't we throw the ball around a bit? It's again, change from being, I'm going to kill these people, we deserve to be here too. Let's control them. Let's just have them on the end of a lead and completely control them.
We had to risk everything, and two or three chips, which you never do, came off.
Pat Howard with the chip ahead. Well, there's a great bit of work here from Murphy underneath it. Now he kicks it. A bouncing ball. And Leon Lloyd! And Leon Lloyd!
You can genuinely almost feel like a lift of the team.
Remember, the tries are one-offs.
And they had to be to break down Stade, because they were defensively one of the best sides in Europe.
This is not easy, but Tim Stimpson with the conversion.
And I kicked the goal over, and it went right over the top of the post, and it was not given. But you can't complain. You know, there's no VAR above a rugby post.
Leon Lloyd's try brought Leicester within a point, but then Captain Martin Johnson's rush of blood put the Tigers in trouble and a man down.
And now Martin Johnson is being called forward, not once but twice, those punches right in front of the referee, David McHugh, and it's a yellow.
Jono had been held at the side of the ruck and he had two or three swings and finally collected with one of the French lads' heads and he got 10 minutes.
Right, how do we man the fort till he gets back?
He went off. Maybe he should have done it more often. Well, maybe he shouldn't have done it. I don't think he could have done it more often. And then the other leaders, the Martin Corries of this world, the Neil Backs of this world, the Roundtrees, they up their game. They go to another level. And it actually triggered us into performing a lot better.
Remarkably, Leicester held out with 14 men and just 3 points conceded in the 10 minutes their captain was off. With 9 minutes to go, Dean Richards makes a substitution and Austin Healey moves across to fly half.
Andy Goode has come off the field and they put Austin Healey to 10. It is the last throw of the dice for Leicester.
Stimpson's long-range penalty levels the match once more. But yet again, Stade's little Argentine-Italian fly half struck.
Dominguez with the drop goal. I don't believe it.
When he dropped that goal, I thought, oh my God, I think we might not win this now.
Certainly you're thinking that could be the moment.
A minute of the 80 to go. Stade Francais 30, Leicester 27. All 30 points from Stade from the boot of the brilliant Dominguez. But Austin Healey was about to upstage Dominguez, where perhaps the most thrilling moment of his remarkable career.
Can Leicester do something special out here?
I always liked calling one call in particular. We had this call called double suck option. I move sideways across the field as fast as I can and bring two runners on the inside at me at the same time. And Von der Tee had just come on in the midfield and he was obviously keen to impress. We called it. It was a bad pass from the line out behind me. Started to accelerate. And then I saw Von der Tee shoot out the line. So I just turned and really tried to put the burners on.
Well, that's a marvellous break from scrum half Healey.
You're sprinting knowing hopefully you're not going to have any part of this.
Scattering defenders. Healey from halfway.
He dummy showed and went through a gap.
Off he goes. Outside to Leon Lloyd.
I just saw his wedding finger.
What a magnificent effort. That is a wondrous try.
A combination of Healy's brilliance, dummying and then darting through the Stade defence, and Leon Lloyd's afterburners put Leicester 2 points ahead and moments to go. But Leicester needed a conversion, or Stade would be one kick away from retaking the lead. And the title. Up stepped Tim Stimpson.
We're 2 points up, and I wasn't celebrating the try, I was nervous.
Kick then from 42 metres for Tim Stimpson.
Can't steer it. You've got to go for the middle of the middle, and all the hours and hours and hours you've spent kicking the ball. I forget that there's 80,000 people. I forget that the mum and dad. I forget that, you know, Jono and all those guys are there with their fingers crossed. All I can think about is, what does it feel like? Then I just execute. And I go, da-dum, 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 bang.
The most difficult side, right on the touchline for a right footer. And watching that kick, he almost kicks the ball over the stand.
And it disappeared. It disappeared through the hole in the sky. It was absolutely a perfect contact.
It is an incredible kick.
And the roar, and that is huge.
A lifetime of thinking, yeah, it was worth spending 10 hours a week for 10, 15, 20 years on my own with a bag of balls, breaking seats in Welford Road, or out there with Dave Allred, or out there with Johnny Wilkinson, or out there with Andy Goode. It all comes down to that.
34-30. If Leicester's famous defence could just hold out, the title was theirs.
So it becomes like those defensive bone-on-bone sessions. All we need to do is just keep them out, keep them out, keep them out.
The referee's whistle goes and Leicester have won a pulsating contest. They are European champions.
Final whistle was a moment like I never experienced again in my career, even winning the World Cup in 03. I think in 03, perhaps there was an element of we knew we were number one, you know, knowing what it meant to everyone else and that nervousness you'd felt beforehand. Although I'd only been in the squad for 2 years, just that feeling of togetherness and all that hard work. And you know, we used to feel that we trained harder than anyone else and put ourselves and our bodies through more than anyone else. And if to not come out with the prize at the end wouldn't have been worth it. Dean Richards, after we'd all got changed, we were meant to go to the official post-match function. And Dean said, we're not doing that. We're going to walk the trophy down the road to the pub at the end of the road where all the Leicester fans are and have a beer with them.
We had 5, 10, 20,000 people from Leicester got up at 6 in the morning, jumped on a bus, went all the way down, got the ferry, got to Paris, and then we're going all the way home again. And the least we could do is go and have a beer. So some of my happiest memories there have been absolutely shattered. It's almost still in your kit, walking down in Paris to a local pub, sitting outside and just drinking beers with our supporters and our mates.
We bought as many bottles of champagne as we could in the duty free and we gave them to supporters on the plane and we all drank together on the plane. Dean Richards was asleep on the front seat with the trophy next to him. So I went up and I drew a...
What can only be described as a spiky cannon on Dean's forehead.
When we arrived back at East Midlands Airport, the BBC were at the bottom of the steps of the plane and he got off with the trophy with some kind of symbol. It looked like a meat and two veg, shall we call it.
An unprecedented Premiership and Heineken Cup double. Remarkably, Leicester would go on to repeat the feat again the following season and cap one of the most dominant periods in club rugby. But for Austin Healy, Ben Kay and Tim Stimson, the first one, the first European title, was the best of the lot.
20 years on, I still meet people, Leicester fans, supporters, who say that was the best day of rugby I've ever had. Thank you very much. And I say, it's a real pleasure. Thanks for coming. So that was the highlight, I think, of my rugby career. We went on to win and retain the Heineken Cup the next year, which was more about being professional. But to be honest, winning the next year felt half as good. So I think that was it. That was an amazing one-off day.
Without doubt, one of the highlights of my career in Paris. It felt like Leicester had gone on holiday to Paris and we were all having a beer with this huge trophy sitting with us. Special times.
Even the likes of Jono and people say, you know what, I've won everything. Captained the Lions, I've won a World Cup, but that Paris day was really special for us.
This turned sort of dreams into completed goals. So it had everything that you'd want in that game. Mistakes, regret, skill, achievement, winning, emotion, and then sharing, I think, was probably the most important word. Sharing with all the supporters, all the support staff, all the families.
You get one or two chances in life to step up, to play against the best. It's the stuff of dreams. You know, when you're a kid playing mini rugby from the age of 5, what do you want? Oh, you want a chance to have a kick, to win and lose a game from the touchline for your mates in front of a packed house in Paris with your mum and dad and your sister and it's quite emotional thinking about it. It means everything.
It's a moment in time that Leicester as a club, that group of people will never be able to repeat for the rest of their lives.
BT Sport Pods.